Good afternoon. You're listening to Around the Block, a community news program from the Block by Block team at WPPM LP Philadelphia 106.5 FM. On this show, we explore issues in the Philadelphia region with voices from the community through original reports from our team of journalists and live interviews. I'm Unique Myrie.
And I'm Sheila Lorette Emerson. Coming up, we'll be speaking with Community Legal Services staff attorney Lauren Davis and with the Pennsylvania Health Access Network statewide organizer Robin Stelly about the impact of federal funding cuts on programs that help people pay for food and health care services and what resources may be available to those impacted.
But first, since Federal Park employees removed signage at the President's House and Slavery Memorial at Independence National Park earlier this year, a coalition of community leaders have been fighting to permanently restore the signs commemorating the nine people who were enslaved at George Washington's house. The city of Philadelphia sued to have the signs restored, and a judge ruled in the city's favor. But only 16 of the 34 signs are back, and the work is on hold as the federal government appeals the ruling. Around the Block reporter Nikki Schaefer brings us this story about why the slavery memorial matters.
Avenging the Ancestors Coalition has been holding rallies at the slavery memorial site at 6th and Market Streets since the signs came down earlier this year. I attended a rally in early February.
We shall overcome.
Hundreds of people came together calling for the restoration of the slavery memorial, including city council members, senators, attorneys, historians, religious leaders, and citizens. Catherine Hicks is the president of the Philly NAACP. She called for promoting a comprehensive historical narrative.
Strength is in numbers, and are we going to go backwards? No, we are not. Are we going to erase our history? No, we are not. I am here today standing with all of you in solidarity. History is not merely a collection of celebrated moments. It encompasses the full spectrum of human experience, including the painful truths that shape our society. This action is a disservice to our city, our nation, and it denies future generations in the chance to learn from our history, fostering an environment of ignorance rather than understanding.
Religious speakers also spoke at the event. Reverend Ruben Ortiz is the executive director of the Hispanic Clergy of Philadelphia. He said public spaces that represent our highest ideals for freedom must also bear witness to the cost of that freedom.
Gloria a Dios! We are all Americans, not just those who are here in the present, but those who preceded us, even those who did not choose to be American. These stories belong to the public record. They belong here. They're part of the 250th anniversary of our country. When we allow the removal, we participate in a tradition of denial that empowers injustices.
After the rally, people lingered in conversations, and I spoke to Robert Fuller Houston.
And I'm a member of the 3rd Regiment United States Colored Troops Civil War reenactors.
Robert came to the rally dressed as a Union soldier to represent those who fought in the Civil War. Robert told me he's standing on the shoulders of his ancestors. His cousin, Sergeant William Kearney, was the first Black soldier to receive a Medal of Honor for his service in the Civil War.
You have to keep up a vigilance about your history. Us, all individuals, I don't care who you are, to speak up, to tell your history.
One group that has been particularly vocal about preserving the memorial has been teachers. Ishmael Jimenez has taught African American studies in Philadelphia for 12 years. He's not teaching anymore, but he has so many memories at the site.
At the President's House. It's just so important to me as an educator who brought students here, who helped do tours here. I taught my students about this history numerous times and even highlight the Ona Judge story, which contradicts the narrative that George Washington was a benevolent slave owner. And then having this present here allowed me to point to something for students to go and visit it themselves, to see the history, to experience it in a real way.
Another educator, Philadelphia school teacher Hannah Gann, teaches African American studies. She came to the rally with some of her students.
I feel empowered, I would say. You know, it makes me happy that people are actually out here trying to establish the truth that was hidden for years. So it makes me happy that there's people out here with different ethnicities that actually still believe in Black history and believe that it should be furthered, you know, continued on to the next generation.
Okay, we can do this, but then it also comes with like a little bit of fear. Like, was this enough? Like, was enough people here? Was enough people tuning into the news at this moment to contribute or to try to stop it? And so that's like the fear, like, in my mind.
One thing I just want to add is that it's the 20-year anniversary of Philadelphia having a mandated African-American history course, and that's thanks to students just like them, right?
The federal government's move to remove signage at the President's House Slavery Memorial is just one of the ways that the Trump administration is pushing to change the way the nation's history is told. Last year, President Trump issued an executive order affecting all public monuments, memorials, statues, and markers that the administration says inappropriately disparage Americans, past or living. Judy Geisberg is a Civil War historian and a professor at Villanova University. She says what's striking about this moment is how all the different ways we learn history are being attacked at once.
It's really going to change the conversations in our classrooms. And I think it's going to be something that we're going to be dealing with for generations when we have people who don't get exposed to this on family vacation or by passing by a site that tells a story that is different than they have heard.
Judy says that memorials allow you to reflect and engage about a place and its meaning.
I think it's really interesting to know how a place like President's House has become a place for people to express a lot of competing memories and, you know, aspirations for this space. I've found it extraordinary, all the protest posters that have gone up and the post-it notes and the ways in which people have become so much more a part of this conversation now that the site was stripped of its signage by this administration, how that sort of cracked open a larger conversation. What's happening at President's House is not the community choosing to change the narrative. It's coming from outside. And the people of Philadelphia are speaking very strongly against it.
For Round the Block, this is Nikki Schaefer.
The Trump administration has adopted policies that are making things harder for many people who rely on financial assistance to pay for food, health care, and other services. I receive SNAP, Medicaid, and Medicare benefits. So I've been impacted by program changes, and frankly, navigating these new requirements is confusing.
I work largely with the immigrant community as an immigrant attorney, and most of these changes have been impacting them.
Joining us to help explain what people in our region need to know are Robin Stelly and Lauren Davis. Lauren is staff attorney in the Health and Independence Unit at Community Legal Services, an organization that provides free legal services to low-income Philadelphians. Lauren, thanks so much for joining Around the Block. Robin is statewide organizer with Pennsylvania Health Access Network, an organization working to expand and protect access to high-quality, fair, and affordable health care in the state. Robin, thanks so much for being here.
Very grateful to be here. Thank you.
So this first question is for both of you. What are some of the changes we've seen over the past year that affect federal funding that helps under-resourced people pay for things like food, healthcare, and other services? Lauren, you can kick it off.
Sure. So the changes that we've seen, beginning in July 2025, Congress passed legislation that we refer to as H.R. 1 that made some major changes to how SNAP and Medicaid benefits will be funded across the nation, which will, of course, have a direct impact on Pennsylvanians. It is a very large package, so there are a lot of different things to dive into. None of the funding changes have gone into effect per se yet, but we anticipate them coming down the line. Some changes for Medicaid impact things that Community Legal Services doesn't work on directly, but will affect our clients. So there have been some changes to how Medicaid will be funded. So for example, there will be changes to how much Pennsylvania can take in from provider taxes from medical providers. There will be changes to state-directed payments, so how much money states can direct managed care organizations to pay hospitals and other critical providers. So those are just two examples. There are some other changes as well, but those are just two examples for Medicaid. And then for SNAP, there will be changes to cost sharing in Pennsylvania, depending on our SNAP error rate. So that won't take effect until October 1st, 2027 or so. But essentially what will happen is, depending on how Pennsylvania makes determinations about for benefits recipients, if there are any mistakes that we make, there could be a change into how much Pennsylvania has to contribute towards the SNAP program. So those are just two examples off top of mind.
Okay, thank you so much. And Robin, would you like to add?
I'm grateful that Lauren pointed out that the changes haven't taken effect yet. A lot of the changes haven't taken effect yet. One has with penny.com. So we'll talk about that in a second. But what we have now is this year, before one of the major changes to Medicaid is going to happen, which is the work requirements, adding work requirements to Medicaid. But we have a year before that actually happens. So we can talk about that more specifically now, or we can do it later. As far as penny.com goes, because we're talking about that as well, that's the health insurance marketplace in Pennsylvania. In some states, it's healthcare.gov still, but in some states, the state took over it. And we did here in Pennsylvania, and we call ours now penny.com. So that's if you don't get insurance from an employer, or it's too expensive for you, so, right, you go through penny.com to get coverage. A change that wasn't in H.R. 1, but something that Congress allowed to happen, has gone into effect, and it's a failure to do something, which is keep the premiums lower, relatively lower, at penny.com. So this year, buying insurance, so in 2025, when people were buying insurance for 2026, their premiums had skyrocketed, literally skyrocketed. And so that is not because of H.R. 1, but because of a failure of Congress to extend the subsidy enhancements, which would be an extra little bit added on to the subsidies that exist. And that is doing incredible damage to people right now. So that harm is happening right now. There's still a chance for us to get that fixed. We are constantly pressuring Congress to extend the subsidies. We would then become retroactive, blah, blah, blah. So there's hope there. But that's something we're working on right now that is, like I say, I'm going to say it again, is doing harm to people today.
Okay, Robin, I heard you mention work requirement for Medicaid. Could you, elaborate on that a little?
Sure. So the work requirements, and Lauren, feel free, please, to jump in case you hear me say something that's wrong. The work requirements are going to apply to people who are 19 to 64, and this would be the Medicaid expansion population. So there's traditional Medicaid, which is people who are low income, children, disabled people, seniors. This is traditional Medicaid that's been around for a long time. And then when the Affordable Care Act passed, it expanded Medicaid. Now people who make a tiny bit more money, still generally low income, but they make more money, and are not on any of those specialized populations I just mentioned. So, for instance, a 35-year-old man who works as a landscape person, seasonal employee, right? He doesn't get insurance all through the year from his employer, or maybe he doesn't get it at all. He can use what we call Medicaid expansion. He can access Medicaid through that door. Now, that group, the 19 to 64, these are people who 64% of them are already working, are going to be required to prove that they're working. So really, it's Medicaid work reporting requirements. Mm. And this is where the problem comes, is that people are not going to be kicked off Medicaid generally for not working. They're going to be kicked off Medicaid due to administrative errors. They're going to file paperwork late. Paperwork is going to get messed up at the county level. Errors are going to happen, and people are going to lose their coverage. This has been proven to be the case with Medicaid work requirements or work requirements in general. So they kick in January 1st of next year. So they're not there now, but what we're doing is counseling people now to pretend they're in effect. Get your head around how that's going to look in your life. Do you talk to the person you're volunteering with? Because you can volunteer, go to school, or work to satisfy your 80 hours a month of whatever work requirement, okay? So it can be go to school, work, or volunteer. So do you need to talk to your volunteer coordinator where you volunteer and make sure you have some type of documentation? Like, get your head around doing that now, because next year, January 1st, it's going to be mandatory that you know how to prove all that. Start gathering the documents now, your pay stubs, whatever you think proves. And then, of course, as Pennsylvania figures out, which they haven't done yet, as Pennsylvania figures out what it's going to look like to prove, what you're going to have to do to prove you work, then they're going to tell you what form you need to fill out, what forms you need to provide. We don't know any of that yet. So we're just asking people to sort of act as if, to get themselves prepared so it's not a big drop on their heads January 1st of next year.
Okay. Thank you, Robin. Lauren, can you speak specifically for SNAP in terms of the work requirement?
Sure. And I would just like to add for Medicaid, there are many categories of exemptions that we're also encouraging people to think about. So, you know, if you're a caregiver for children under 14 or a person with a disability, if you are pregnant, if you are in a substance use disorder program, there are many, many categories that might make you exempt. And so then you won't have to comply with Medicaid work requirements. And that is something that we're also trying to get the word out about right now. For SNAP, it is similar. For SNAP, the difference is that work requirements have existed in SNAP prior, whereas for Medicaid, that hasn't necessarily been the case. It's just in Philadelphia and much of Pennsylvania, we've had a geographical waiver. So work requirements didn't apply here. So what they are is that you have a 3-month time limited period within a 3-year period that is set by the federal government. So the current period that ends in December 2026. So for 3 months within this current time period, you cannot be compliant or not exempt from SNAP work requirements, and you'll still be able to get SNAP. The specific requirements are that you be working 20 hours per week. That can be paid, unpaid, or informal, participating in an employment and training program at least 20 hours per week, or doing community service and volunteering for that same time. And then again, there are many exemptions, just like with Medicaid. So you could be receiving a disability benefit, you could be pregnant, you could be caring for an elderly or disabled family member. There are a number of exemptions. So we're encouraging you, if you don't know if you're exempt and you can't comply, seek help, go to your local welfare office, contact a local legal aid organization like Philadelphia or FAN, and just see what's available to you.
And I can just, this is perfect. Thank you so much, Lauren. If you want to call FAN, our helpline, you can call with questions about SNAP or questions about Medicaid or questions about penny.com, not Medicare, though. The number is, write this down, 877-570-3642. That's the number you want to call. And so you don't have to memorize what Lauren and I are telling you now. If you have a question, you don't know if you're exempt, you don't know if you need to do whatever, call our helpline and they'll help you out.
Lauren, can you speak specifically to the changes as it relates to the immigrant community?
So for both medical assistance and SNAP, nearly all new non-U.S. citizens without green cards will be ineligible for SNAP. Specifically, beginning November 1st, November 1st, 2025. So that's for new applicants as of that date. And then for current recipients, the issue will come up for them at their next renewal period. So that's on a rolling basis that will be considered. For Medicaid, that change will go into effect October 2026. So essentially what that means is there were several categories of immigrants who could get SNAP and Medicaid assistance. It'll be shrinking to only green card holders, Cuban Haitian entrants, and then COFA migrants, which is not really a group that is in Pennsylvania. So I won't get into that too much. So essentially green card holders and Cuban Haitian entrants for our purposes, excluding lawfully present pregnant adults and children. No changes for them.
And when it comes to penny.com, mm-hmm. they will be, the groups that Lauren described are going to be ineligible for tax credits. So that means they have to pay full freight at penny.com, which basically prices them out of insurance at penny.com. So that those don't kick in until January 2027. So, but still, you know, we want to keep our eye on that. Oh, and then I would add just if you are an immigrant and you're not sure, do I get help? Can I get this? Can I get that? Always, always, always call CLS. Always call the FAN helpline. Don't ever, ever say no to yourself. Always let someone else do that for you.
So one of the things that you talked about is qualifying for SNAP, qualifying for Medicaid, and, you know, people need to get their head around certain things that they need to start doing. One question is, that's actually a two-part question. One is, SNAP and Medicaid have different income eligibility requirements. Because with SNAP, I believe, you know, I'm on SNAP, so they actually take the some expenses, deduct them from my total income, and that's how they qualify me for SNAP. Whereas with Medicaid, they don't. So can you talk more about the income requirements, because I found that to be extraordinarily confusing when I first started getting into dealing with all of this. Lauren?
I'm looking at Lauren.
The income requirements for SNAP?
SNAP and Medicaid, they're different.
They're slightly different. So for SNAP, to be in a SNAP eligible household, and this is just like the most simple because all the rules are complicated. Eligible households are under 200% of the federal poverty level. And so the federal poverty level is a level set by the federal government each year to determine, what is like the average amount that a household makes and what falls below that. So there's 100%, that's the baseline. So 100%, that baseline is the limit for SNAP. CLS does have a SNAP calculator on its website where you can take a look and see if your household might be eligible for SNAP. So that's more of a straightforward answer for you as a specific person. And our website is www.clsvilla.org. For Medicaid, Robin referenced it earlier. It's 100 for the expansion group, which is for who work requirements applies to. It's 138% of the federal poverty level. So it is a little bit lower. There are other categories of Medicaid that have a slightly higher threshold that you could be eligible for, say if you're a person with a disability who's working. But that can get a little complicated. So I just want to flag that you could be making a little bit above that and still qualify for a different category of Medicaid that we're not talking about today.
So to follow up, because this is, it can be confusing, what services are available to help people apply for Medicaid, for SNAP and other programs? And Lauren, we'll ask you to go first.
So I think Robin might be better suited to answer this question, but so there are local organizations in Philadelphia that can help you apply. Benefilly comes to mind for me. Robin, is there anything else you'd like to add about applications?
The go-to number is FAN, is the Pennsylvania Health Access Network helpline. It truly is a wonderful resource. And I work there, so full disclosure, but it truly is great. So it's 877-570-3642. And so if there's one thing I want to communicate to everybody who's listening is don't say no to yourself. Don't sit down at your kitchen table and say, I make this amount. I looked up a calculator, and the calculators are amazing, and you should definitely use them. But even if you see the calculator number come up bad, don't throw your hands up and say, well, I'm done. I can't qualify. No. You know, get your calculator, do it, get an idea, and then call Fan and say, look, I did this. It tells me I'm not eligible. What do you say? And then Fan might know something that you didn't know when you calculated your information, and you guess what? You do. And they can handle SNAP and Medicaid questions. So you definitely want to never say no to yourself. Always, always, always backstop it at the Fan helpline.
100% right.
And just to, you know, we hear a lot of people out there trying to advocate for some changes. So what actions can people take to advocate and support folks who are on SNAP, PENI, Medicaid, and other programs impacted by these federal policies? Is there really anything that the common man can do to really...
Do you want me to go, Lauren, or do you want to take that first?
You can go for
it. Okay, because that's actually what I do. So, right. So we have, well, there's two paths. Right now, you know, we want those subsidy enhancements extended at PENI.com. We want people talking to Congress about that. And that's one thing. That's PENI, not Medicaid. As far as Medicaid goes, I'll tell you what we're doing right now is we're trying to hear from as many people as possible who use Medicaid. That would be Medicaid expansion. A lot of people don't know they're using Medicaid expansion. Mm. They just know that they qualify for Medicaid and they're using it and they're grateful for it and it's helping their lives. So we don't need you to know you use a certain type of Medicaid. But if you use Medicaid, we want to hear from you at FAN because we're trying to collect as many stories as possible now so that we can show that Medicaid works. It's very, very important right now in this year that we have before the work requirements come into place and the system starts to fray, because we can pretty much predict with certainty that it's going to start to fray when all these new administrative requirements happen, right? They aren't hiring new people as far as we know, right? They're not doubling or tripling the Medicaid workforce, which would probably be required. So, but they are going to put more burden on it. And so then we're very fearful that the program will fray. We want to be able to prove that Medicaid works, that it's working your life. That doesn't mean we only want to hear from people who are having the perfect experience on Medicaid. Medicaid has, you know, every program in the world has things that could be made better. We say triple the funding of Medicaid. Definitely do not cut the funding of Medicaid if you have issues with it, right? So we definitely want to hear from anybody who uses Medicaid. And I don't know how exactly, unless there's going to be like information and the helpline is not the number to call, actually. It would be me on my email. So I can give that email out now if that's helpful. And so it's Robin, like the bird, R-O-B-I-N, at pahealthaccess.org. pahealthaccess.org. That's my email address and Robin in front of it. So if you are on Medicaid and you'd like to share your story about that with me, I would be thrilled to hear from you. I really cannot get enough stories. If you told me that I would have 1 million stories in my email box when I go home, I need 3 million. If you tell me I have 3 million, I need 9 million. It's literally, there's no upper limit on the number of stories we need. So feel free to contact.
And what exactly do you do with those stories?
Well, we put them in our story bank. And what do we do with them? What are we going to do with them, too? So what we do with them now is we use them when we talk to legislators and reporters often. Now, we never use a story without getting permission from the storyteller, of course. Every time we get a request for a story, we always get permission to use it. But reporters need to know, especially about PENI lately. In the future, though, remember, we're going to try to prove that Medicaid works so that when a year, 3 years from now, they're saying, oh, Medicaid's never worked, it's been broken forever, we can go back to our stories that we're able to collect now in this year and say, look, Medicaid did work. And it was the addition of the work requirements that, quote unquote, broke it, not Medicaid. Medicaid was doing great.
Yes.
To the, you know, and so that's where we want to go. And we have only now to get these stories, right? This is our only time to do it.
Thank you so much. That was very, very informative. Anything else you'd want to add, Lauren?
No, just about how CLS can help. We do help people with appeals who think that they're facing a wrongful benefits termination. We are expanding our capacity to take those cases. As like Robin said, we expect this defray going forward. We take intake in person on Mondays and Wednesdays by phone at 215-981-3700. And someone will call you back that morning between 9 and 12 if you call. And then we have in-person intake on Tuesdays and Thursdays at Broad and Erie, 1410 West Erie, right off the Broad and Erie stop.
Robin, Lauren, that was amazingly helpful. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us with this episode.
Thank you so much. Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor for WPPM. Peter Lowe is Radio Operations Manager. And Alyssa Durham is WPPM's Radio Program Manager. I'm Unique Myrie.
And I'm Sheila Lorette Emerson. And thanks to Crystal Herrera, who is our board operator for this episode.
Around the Block will be back on March 29th with another episode featuring more stories and conversation from our team of Philadelphia era community journalists. And you can find more episodes of Block by Block on Philly Cam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you find your podcasts.
Thanks for listening.